Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Hello there, dearest listeners. How are you? Welcome to Homo Sapiens. Your weekly neighbourhood bit of queer life, as I like to call it, life from a queer perspective. How are we all doing? Are we all revelling in the Lionesses winning at the Euros? I mean, come on! It's unbelievable. I'm so thrilled to see it. Listen, I don't know anything about football. I think we've all established that. But just seeing 17 million people watching it in the UK on the BBC, you know, it means that it's here to stay. And I just think it's so lovely to see what should have happened ages ago. Women playing football on a similar level is just such brilliant news. And I hope their salaries start to reflect as much. Who makes those salaries? I'm sadly not involved, otherwise I'd be giving the women all the money. What a joyous thing to see them celebrate. I love how they ran into the press conference. You know, it really reminded me of, it's so funny how gendered this world is, and how, do you remember when Freddie Flintoff and his team won the cricket, and there was this whole thing about Freddie Flintoff stayed out sort of raving all weekend, or all night, and he never went to sleep? I don't know, there was just, this could be completely subjective, but there was very much that kind of boys will be boys feeling about that. Like, oh, rapscallions, boys will be boys. And we don't often get to see women celebrating in that way. I don't know, I feel like the news or society, big words here, Chris, is sort of preconditioned to, it's men who celebrate like that, with that kind of extravagance and longness. I don't know. I'm just interested in things about how, why we end up positioning men and women in different ways when actually everybody can do everything, people. And that was the beautiful, bright ray of hope it gave me. And speaking as a person who's just had a daughter, if she should grow up and want to play football, then brilliant. Unfortunately, daddy will not be able to explain the offside rule. It's just lovely to see women doing so well in football, queer women doing so well in football as well. I just loved every minute. Now, what are we doing today? Well, firstly, we've got a brilliant guest, Ryan O'Connell. I will go into that more because I love Ryan. He wrote the Netflix show Special, which was about being a queer man with cerebral palsy. It was a comedy. It was really funny. And actually, the thing that amazes me about Ryan is that he lied a lot when he was younger about why he had cerebral palsy. And he's so honest about how he lied. And I just really love people who can do that. Literally, the secret to all happiness is to be honest about who you are. And Ryan's been very honest about his own journey towards that. And if you can ever Google, like, Ryan's little articles that he used to write online. He used to write quite short articles. They're very, very fascinating about the queer experience because they're just really honest and very relatable and very funny. Anyway, he's been writing Queer as Folk, the new Queer as Folk in America, and he's in it as well. So that's very exciting. And then he's also written his first book. Well, his first sort of fiction book, I think. It's called Just By Looking at Him. And it's really good. It's got the funniest first line in the world, which I will not spoil, but it's to do with penises. That's just very Ryan. He is fearless. That's what I love about him. And I learn so much with him. And actually, I'm quite classically English as well. So Ryan sort of challenges me on stuff. And I love that because then I'm always like, oh, yeah, I'm being very English. So that's coming up. It's a very, very funny chat. We're trying to pick a quote to put out. And it's like there were like 40 options because he's so funny. So That's good. And then have you listened to the Jessie Ware interview yet? I mean, all I can say to you is you lot really like Jessie Ware. I'm so thrilled. I mean, I'd been sitting on that concept of that interview for 5 years. I probably should have done it sooner because, yeah, you all just loved it. And so many people got in touch to say how much you loved it. And by the way, did we ever find out about Jessie Ware's lactose intolerance results? I must find out. Let me see if I can get the answers for you. I'll do her a voice note and see if she replies while we're talking. Beb, I'm with the listeners of Homo Sapiens, and we want to know whether you were lactose intolerant or not from the results of the milk you were drinking during the interview, if you recall. Now, I love hearing from you, so please get in touch. Let me know what you think of this episode, the Jessie episode, the everything episode. Let me know what you're doing this summer. Let me know. Email is hello@homosapienspodcast.com or get in touch with us on Instagram @homosapiens. Now, last week's episode, you said lovely things. Jason said, "This is such a beautiful chat. This is me and Jessie." Thank you, Jason. "Wish I could give you the biggest hug, Jessie. Thanks for sharing your art and heart with us." Lovely. Quite right. Drew said, "My two favourites. Christmas in July." Drew, you are lovely. Thank you so much. Liam, incredible. Didn't want it to end. Now, Liam, we know, is a big Jessie Ware fan. We had a little chat about that on Instagram. Doppelganger Vish said, "Loved this week's podcast. So you asked where and when we listen to it." Oh, yeah. So I was asking you all where you listen to the podcast. Doppelganger firstly says, "So it's a ritual I listen to it during my morning shower. It settles the voices I struggle with, but also makes me feel wanted, understood, and at the same time educated. 40 years of missed life being uploaded into my brain through your epic podcast." Ah, lovely. "To be wanted and unlonely for this part of the day gives me hope." Listen, absolutely, you are wanted, and all of you listening are wanted by this here pod. "I'm too conscious about how people see me or if I'm upsetting on anyone with how I'm seen or dressed. The calm achieved by some of the issues brought up, though, etc., just makes me feel like I fit in because they have all crossed my mind or I have lived it." Love that. "We're here to be of service, so I'm thrilled to hear that we are of use." Doppelganger Bish. SES Short. SE Short. Said, "Just realised I wasn't following you on Instagram. What are you doing? You're missing out on Culture Club and all these fun things, which is weird, as I was an early adopter." Ah, oh, wonderful. "With you since episode one." Thank you so much. We should give people lifetime achievement awards, shouldn't we? "I'm also probably one of your oldest fans, 55. Nuh-uh, won't hear it. So dead in gay years." Oh my God, that's so funny. "You ain't dead, you're just beginning. Just wanted to say I love HS, and like you, I'm a regular B&Q visitor and tip fan." Oh, adorable. "We're doing up a house in Hastings, oh my God, and I go so regularly to our local waste plant that I'm on first name terms with the guys who work there. Keep up the good work, SS." Please don't let this be the end. "I need you to write in, tell me about this house you're doing up in Hastings. I love Hastings, it's so pretty. Please can you send me pictures, please can you send me all of it. I want to know more. Any of you, if you're doing any renovations, doesn't mean if even if you're just painting a corner of a piece of wood, I want to see photos. Nothing excites me, makes me happier. I'm telling you." Are the people who wrote in and said the who's and when's and why's and what's and how's of where they watch the show. Lots of you wrote in. Thank you so much. KM747 listens to us in the gym. "Gym bros don't know I'm educating myself on all things queer." I love that. Okay, so I'm going to do some inspirational. Come on, KM747, you can do it. One more push. Hopefully that was inspirational. Rambo as well says they listen in the gym or on lunch break. Mark listens in Manchester. Hello, Manchester. God, I love it up there. Emma says she listens when she's at home doing the housework. I like doing a bit of housework to podcasts, actually. I realised I'm sort of actually someone who needs to be doing two things at once. I can't really do one thing at a time. Not Hidden, obviously, says, "Putting on my slap every Friday morning before work in Urbane, New Zealand." Hello, New Zealand, and hello, slap. I love that. "Riding is my life," says, "at work in Canada." "If I go into my office, you're on my commute," says Herbie. Tears from Chile. "I've been listening for 4 years. Thanks and congrats on the big five." Love you for that, Tia. P-Burn, shower, car, walks, chores. Interesting. Good selection there. I like it. I like listening to podcasts on a walk. But the thing is, I'm always then just shouting, "Ridley!" to the dog because he's running off. Wildio says, "Always when walking my dogs, Eddie and Kimmy, on the island, on the Isle of Islay." Where's the Isle of Islay, Jen? That's from Jen. Jen, We can't have a conversation about the dogs, Eddie and Kimmy, and not be sent a photo. Please, God, send in a picture of those dogs. I will share it with everybody so we all get to see dogs. T.A. Goodson has been listening in Arkansas. Hello there, Goodson. T.A. Goodson, I think that is. Cindy, sitting in my comfy old yellow vintage chair with a nice cuppa. Oh, my God. Is there anything better than sitting, having a cup of tea and listening to something lovely? Anyway, I could go on. Thank you so much for all of your wonderful, wonderful... it's so nice to be able to visualise where you are, all are. And anyone who's in the gym, get back on it. I want another set and I don't want 12, I want 14 reps. You hear me? Exercise, by the way, it never gets any easier, does it? It's just really hard. But you feel good. It sorts my brain out. That's why I do it. Speaking of good mental health, should we talk to Ryan O'Connell? You're going to be howling with laughter. You're going to love him. Here's my chat with Ryan. Say no more. What I'm really pleased about is the fact that we're both wearing a lovely shade of yellow slash mustard, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. Mine is like a darker, what's like a Charlie Brown moment of whatever.
And where is this from, this beautiful purchase?
It's from Dries.
Shut up. I love it. Very glamorous.
I don't fuck around, Chris. I just don't.
No, I've really noticed that about you. Mine, since you ask, is from... Where is it from? Sunspell, thought so.
Oh my God. You know, Sunspell, let's go deep on that for a second. Sunspell has a really incredible white t-shirt. Now, you can't underestimate the power of a really good white tee. My favorite white tee was this shirt from Acne called Measure, which they discontinued horrifically. And then, this is really dark. I'm going to admit something right now. Anthony from Queer Eye had a thing on The Strategist where he talked about his favorite white t-shirts. I was eyeing his white t-shirts on Queer Eye being like, that's a good fit. That's similar to Measure. So I ordered Sunspell and honey, it's great. It slaps. It's a banger.
Really?
Yeah.
It's interesting you say that because I was in Sunspell and noted that their t-shirts are something ridiculous, like £80. Which is what, $120? And I was like, what fucking world do we live in?
Well, they're incredible. And honestly, the Acne Measure tee was even worse. It was even more expensive. I mean, it's like straight up mental illness, obviously. But like, honey.
Can I tell you my ambition? This says terrible things about me.
Okay.
But we're here for the honesty. I used to think if you have an amazing body, you can wear whatever t-shirts or clothes.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. You just look amazing.
Yep.
So it's like, instead of buying expensive clothes, spend that on gym membership and then you can buy whatever, but you'll look amazing. The problem is I never did the gym bit.
Oh, honey, wait, you don't go to the gym like ever?
I mean, I do, but I don't.
Yeah, I don't believe it. No, you guys, gays are so fucked up. I feel like people are always like, oh, the gym, LOL. And they like take off their shirt and they have this amazing body. Like the amount of like ripped guys on Grindr that identify as average body makes my soul die. Like literally, it's so sad. Yeah, because you're like, honey, you're not average. You have a very conventionally attractive body. You have like abs and yet you're identifying as average because of body dysmorphia. Like it's fucked.
Yes.
It ain't right.
I appreciate that. And I'm really thrilled that you think I've got a great body, Ryan, but I actually just don't. And I've never had one. But the problem is we are fighting an uphill battle of someone approaching 40 suddenly decided to exercise when their body hadn't moved for the first 34 years of their life. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit of that.
But I just don't believe you. So like I think you do go to the gym. I think I'm really, I just.
Oh no, of course I do.
Oh, see, there you go.
But I don't have the body.
I think you do, but because of body dysmorphia, you don't. You say you don't.
Really? God, I'd love to get that diagnosed properly, and then I could just relax.
I don't think you need a diagnosis. I think it's just called being gay and being alive.
Are you sure you're not Dr. Ryan O'Connell?
I know. Well, here's the thing. Like, I look back at photos of myself when I was 24. I did not go to the gym. My version of cardio was running to my drug dealer's house, but I looked incredible. I looked so good. And I did not know that. I thought I was gay Gollum. And now, like at 35, I'm in the best shape of my life, TBH. And like, I am loving it. And I dress like a fucking slut every day. Obviously not today. And I, everything is fit with an inch, like literally like the, my clothes are just painted on my body. And I, you know, on Queer as Folk, I was delighted to do nude scenes, obsessed. Like I, because I just feel like when I was in my 20s, everything was lost on me. I did not appreciate a single thing. I had such low self-esteem and I just refused to do that. At 35, like I, I'm like, I'm owning it. I'm obsessed. And I'm like, no, I'm learning to really appreciate it because it's going to be gone. It's all temporary.
Yes, it is. And I look, I can relate to half of that, which is I look at photos of myself now. Maybe I've said this on the podcast, so sorry to anyone if I've said it before. I look at photos of myself now from when I was 17, and I'm aware this is a common experience. But I'm like, you were so amazing. Like, how lovely looking you were, and you fucking hated yourself.
Yeah.
And that is, that was all gay shame. I did not, I wasn't even in the room. I didn't want to be there.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Well, you just don't know what to do with what you got. And it's a real, so that's why I'm just learning to, I'm just knowing what I got.
Yes. Yeah. Getting out there and hustling, baby.
Yes, honey. My come springer is here.
Now, I just want to start, even though we've been talking for 10 minutes, by saying how brilliant your book is.
Oh, thank
you. Massive congratulations.
Thank you.
Because last time we spoke, you said, oh, I've done this book, but, you know, we couldn't talk about it for obvious reasons. And the lovely tone of the way you talk comes across and your extreme honesty. And it's so funny and very poignant at many points, and just a massive congratulations.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. You're one of the first people I'm talking to about it. It feels crazy to be with it. Yeah, it feels great. I mean, look, the process of it was much shorter than typical novels because I wrote the first draft in 4 months, which I know I should go like in the witness protection program saying that, because it's like, it should have been like a torturous slog. It should have been like, you know, because my first book, which is like basically a pamphlet sold at Urban Outfitters, it took me, it took me 2.5 years to write basically a 40-page book because I was 26. I didn't quite know how to write. I was all voice, no structure, no style. So it was really, really difficult for me to write that book. And then this one truly poured out of me in this kind of myth, like in sort of this way that as a writer, like it's like you hear about those things happening, but it never happens to you. Like I've had, I've had a few like little pieces of writing that have kind of poured out of me very quickly that feel like almost like an exorcism. Like it's like not even me. It's like something's taking over my body. But to have that, to have that with a long form writing project was beyond my wildest dreams. And I feel like I'm going to be chasing the dragon forever after that. Like I just like, cause it was so surreal that it happened so quickly.
How many hours did you write for a day in 4 months, out of interest?
I wrote 1,000 words a day, basically, give or take. That was that was my thing. And I didn't set out to write a novel. I mean, in the back of my mind, I kind of knew that it could be a novel, but I did not want to give myself that pressure. So what I did is I did not have a roadmap. I did not plot this out at all. I just said, I'm going to write 1,000 words a day and see what happens. And then before I knew it, I had a full-fledged novel. It was crazy. And I felt like the whole time while I was writing it, I was like, this will be the day that I run out of gas. This will be the time. This will be the day that the story structure will fall apart. I'll hit a wall. And I just never did. And I feel like that's a testament to like, I've just been breaking stories in television writers' rooms for like years. So like structure is just muscle memory to me now. Like I just know how to do it. But I don't know. It was a real, it like felt like extreme sports writing edition. It really was like a rush. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think as well that I would argue that you're not going to, you know, this isn't the only time it'll happen, because I think that you have spent so much time being aggressively honest. And I think a lot of the time when you're writing a novel, let's imagine that it is fiction in this fictional example, you're trying to find where the truth is in all of this, you know, and actually you're so good at that. And so that's why perhaps it comes easier, because you make it your business to be really, really honest about what's going on with you. Perhaps because there was a time when you weren't so honest, right?
Yeah, I think I'm making up for lost time for sure. I mean, I think I was purging a lot of feelings that had been percolating for a couple of years. Like the germ of the novel, like the kind of mood and the landscape that I wanted to create had been kind of sitting with me for a while. And I never would have done it if it wasn't for lockdown. I mean, I did this because of lockdown, because I was feeling out of control and kind of feeling unmoored, and my show had gotten shut down and I hated the world that we lived in. So I kind of wanted to get lost in a different one. And the whole undertaking of writing a novel, I mean, I think also psychologically not treating it as a novel, but a writing exercise, allowed me to finish it. Because I think if I was really going to sit down and be like, I'm writing a novel, I think I would have been paralyzed by the enormity of it. But I think I had a lot of things that I had been living with for a couple years that I hadn't really talked about, and I needed to like purge it exorcism style. And honestly, like, obviously I was hoping that someone would buy it, especially towards the end, because I was so proud of it. But honestly, if no one had bought it, it would have done its job, because I grew so much while writing. I mean, the book helped me get sober. That was a huge part of like, so at the really? Yeah. So at that point, honestly, it would have been a win-win regardless of what happened with it. Because I had had a problem with drinking for a couple years, and I had never really vocalized it to myself or anyone else. And I thought by giving those feelings a home in this character, sort of like once you see, you can't unsee. So I knew that just by even admitting these things to myself, I would be pushed towards sobriety. And it worked. I got sober halfway through writing the book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So one of the things you talk about a lot in the book is alcohol and alcohol dependency and things. And I was listening to you speak as well on a podcast by the writer who wrote that book. What's it called?
This Naked Mind. Yeah, you listened to that, Chris?
Yeah.
Oh my God,
yeah.
Love. Honey, she did her research. I'm so proud of you. You did a deep dive, baby. I love that.
Blushing. And it's really funny because I've obviously done a bit of introduction in the introduction of this episode, but Elliot is the character who is, you know, he's a TV writer, he's a queer man with cerebral palsy, like he's not a million miles from you, one might say.
No, he's around the corner.
He's around the corner, two doors down. Mm-hmm. And he struggles with alcohol. And I was listening and I was like, it's so interesting because I don't want to underplay at all any of your own issues around alcohol, but the relationship between people and alcohol in the US and the UK is so different. It blows my mind.
Wait, like, but in what way? Because when I famously lived in London for one calendar month, I
we still celebrate it.
Yeah, you know. You should.
We moved Pride, actually.
Fucking should, okay? I lived on Old Compton Street. I was 23. I had my first one-night stand at Joyner's Arms. It was a moment.
Did you?
I did. And then I ran into him on the tube. There I am, being all English, on the tube. And it was traumatizing. We both were like, lol. Anyways, so... what I saw the UK's relationship with alcohol, I almost saw it as being more fucked up than Americans, which I didn't know was possible, because people were blackout wasted at like 9 p.m. It was like shocking.
Yes. That's what I mean.
It's so crazy. Like the pub culture is so ingrained and people are truly getting blackout. Like it's like spring break Cancun, but like just a Tuesday, but it's like a Tuesday night and like the person is like, you know, a banker or something like that. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you are not allowed on the whole to say that you think someone's drinking behavior is unacceptable. They're like, lighten up. You know what I mean?
Well, it's of course, just very... it's been normalized. It's been normalized. And it's been normalized in America too. And I think our culture, American and, you know, in the UK, we worship at the altar of booze. We really do. And it's like, we can't imagine a world without it. And if you opt out of that kind of cultural conditioning, it's really triggering for people. It's very, very triggering because we've all bought into it. And it is what it is. And I think that like we somehow delude ourselves by looking at drinking in a very binary way of like, you have a problem and you don't have a problem. Like you're an alcoholic or you're not an alcoholic. And I think what was so revolutionary to me about reading this book, because, you know, I had dipped into AA and NA in my 20s when I had a problem with painkillers. And it never resonated with me. And I think I felt very guilty about that and very bad because I was like, part of me was like, oh, am I just not ready to be sober? But then I also was like, I don't really like the program. I just don't. And I wish there was another way for me to get sober. Like, I just wish there was another way. And I didn't know there was another way until I read this book. And I feel so grateful because the way it breaks down alcohol, it's so like science-based and facts-driven. And like the cultural conditioning and kind of like the collective brainwashing we have around booze is so powerful that like no wonder it's really hard. Like I feel like I didn't get sober for like 2 extra years because I was like, I couldn't conceive of like not having frosé in Provincetown. Like that is like, that's mental illness, love. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's truly like, like that is not okay because I could not imagine going to P-Town without being wasted. It's just so insane.
Yes. And so the book is called This Naked Mind. And who's it by? What's her name? Amy?
Annie Grace. Yeah.
It's sort of her take on... Oh, well, tell me the synopsis of the book, if you would, because I know people will be fascinated to hear about it.
She was, you know, a high-functioning, heavy drinker. She drank, like, 2 bottles of wine a night, but, like, her life was never, like, in shambles. You know what I mean? It was, like, sort of this, like, frustrating, high-functioning vibe, which I really relate to, because my life on the surface did not suffer from my drinking. I was, like, killing it at work. My relationship was great. My friendships were great. It was just sort of this like gradual soul deadening, exhaustion, mid-grade hangover permanency that was so frustrating. But the book is really about examining the cultural conditioning with alcohol and how we have, as a society, been kind of brainwashed into thinking that it's irreplaceable. And then really diving into like what alcohol does to the brain and the body and why you become addicted to it and how it's not always about a genetic predisposition. It's just alcohol is a addictive substance. Like I drank normally in quotes for like 10 years before I really started to go on like a slow decline. And it was gradual. It was not like, and I was never the person that was like, oh, I can, you know, once I start, I can't stop. That was never me. Like it really took a long time to get its claws into me. And it's because again, alcohol is addictive. So at a certain point, you're most likely going to develop some sort of problem with it, or you're going to be drinking more than you want. And that's just sort of how it works. But again, I think to prevent any kind of examination, I think, again, we like to put people in these little boxes and say, well, you know, your mom was an alcoholic, so obviously you're more likely to get it. And I just don't think that's true. Yeah. So it just goes into that. It goes into like the science and the facts and just like, also like it goes into like your conscious and your subconscious where like, consciously, I wanted to stop drinking. But then subconsciously, I have years and years of conditioning of like, alcohol is amazing. Like, undead to me. They're drinking like wine at 11 a.m. Ha ha ha. Like mom juice. Da, 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 da. Like there's like this aggressive normalization that your conscious is competing against. And that's why your subconscious usually always wins. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. And so tell me the moment you realized that alcohol was... you're aware of it being a problem for you. Was there a moment?
I don't think there really was like a specific moment. I think it was just a series of things. I was like, I really want to change this, but I'm not really able to. I mean, I think when I was shooting Special before right before lockdown, I would not drink when I had to shoot. And so I was sober from like what, Sunday night to Friday night. And I was so proud of myself for being sober those 5 nights. And then, but Friday night I would reward myself by getting absolutely obliterated because like, and I would like be like kind of counting down the days of like Friday night where I could really like cash in my sobriety chips. And like, it's like how I did Dry January twice as a way to gain an illusion of control. But then I celebrated succeeding by getting wasted because I was still under the impression. That's the thing. It's a perspective shift. I still believed in alcohol. I still believed in what alcohol gave me. So me abstaining always felt like a sacrifice. It always felt like white knuckling my way through it. And I think also like what really resonated with me about Annie Grace's book, it sort of like reveals alcohol to be the sort of like giant scam that doesn't really give you what you think it does. And I think looking at it through that lens of like, oh, this is not a sacrifice whatsoever. This is called leveling up. That was like a game changer for me because like, and then so like when I would, you know, when I would shoot special and then Friday night would roll around and I would be like basically rushing home to have that bottle of wine because I had earned it. There was definitely like these moments of clarity where I'd be like, oh, maybe this has like more control over me than I thought. And then in lockdown, like everyone else, I was drinking way too much. And it was like, it was like, okay, you can't, when you're not socializing, when you're not, when it's not going out with friends for drinks and it's just you at home and 5 p.m. rolls around and you're basically paralyzed at the thought of not drinking, that's when you are like, you can, there's no hiding it anymore. It's sort of just like right there in HD. And so I think like I got sober in June. So I had like 3 months of like really aggressive quarantine drinking. And I think that sped up the process. I think I would have gotten there regardless, but I think it kind of pushed the fast forward button a little bit.
It's funny, isn't it? That change. So many things were changed by isolation and all of that. And tell me a bit about what it feels like now to not be drinking.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's like literally like my life is so much easier. First of all, vanity alone, I got so much hotter. I lost 30 pounds. I like I got like randomly ripped. Like literally, like I look the best I've ever looked. It's like crazy. I'm literally like, oh my God, my skin is no longer like, my skin was a disaster. Like it's just, you're literally poisoning yourself, not to be drama, but it's ethanol. So like you're poisoning your body every night. So obviously that's not going to do wonders for you facially. I feel like my body is sort of where it wants to be, what it's meant to be. And then before that, I was just like a human wine cellar. I also feel like I always identified as a very anxious, stressed out person. And I work a lot. Like I have a high pressure job. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I would rely on alcohol as sort of this marker to unwind and kind of, you know, divide the day of this is where work ends because I'm such a workaholic. And I kind of needed wine to sort of tranquilize or dart myself. And what I've realized through being sober is that actually, I'm not a super anxious or stressed out person. The wine was making me sort of incapable of dealing with a lot of things because I was walking around life with a permanent mid-grade hangover. So like, obviously it was just creating more problems and it was exacerbating the anxiety because I was becoming dependent on a thing to function. And so once I removed that, like it's so interesting. I for so long needed some sort of release to kind of like, you know, for the end of the day. And now I don't have that. Now it's just like normal. Now the day just ends. I don't need to do a certain thing to unwind. So that's been a real eye opener for me.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because I, you know, so much what you're saying, I'm like, yep, I do that. Yep, I do that. You know, with alcohol being the tranquilizer dart to, you know, make yourself relax.
Well, because my brain, it's a blessing and a curse. But my brain goes like 80,000 miles per hour. And it's great because it's allowed me to accomplish a lot of things, but it can be hard to stop. You know what I mean? It can be hard to like chill out. And it's gotten so much better though. Like I don't need one thing to slow down. I can kind of just like do it on my own. And also there's something really empowering about owning every aspect of your life, the good, the bad, the not chic, like all of it belongs to me. Whereas before, a lot of it belonged to alcohol. It took up a lot of real estate.
That's interesting.
Well, it just took up a lot of real estate in my brain and managing my managing my drinking and thinking about alcohol. Just like it had a starring role. And honestly, and I'm not saying this to throw shade because so many of my friends got sober through the program and it saved so many lives. But when I would go to AA or NA or whatever, I would think to myself, I'm trying to remove alcohol from my life, or I'm trying to remove drugs from my life and not have it be such a starring role. And it feels like it still has this starring role in their lives. And I don't want to focus on it that much. I don't want to talk about, like, you know what I mean? I don't want to like be fixated. I don't want to take things one day at a time. That sounds really hard. That's just me personally. That's how I felt. Yeah. Again, I know the program has done so many amazing things, but with This Naked Mind, the way they frame alcohol and kind of give contextual support as to like why I was kind of hooked on it and why, like, you know, born into the society that I was born into, it has allowed me to quit alcohol, but also I don't really think about it and it's not tempting to me. And I think that's the hardest thing that drinkers have. They cannot grasp that. They're like, I still, like, when I'm out at bars, people will be like, do you need water? Are you okay? Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, honey, I'm good. And it's not like, it's not doth protest too much. Like, I, like, truly, like, when I read this book, alcohol became revolting to me. Like, I became disgusted by it. And so, like, I am not tempted at all. It's the easiest decision I ever made.
And then, okay, so talk to me about when you're in P-Town and all your friends are on the Froze. We're 2 hours in,
yeah.
So it's a bit messy. Where is your head at in that moment?
Well, that can be hard because I feel like sometimes, like when you're sober and people are getting wasted, it's like you're on different channels. You just are. Mm. I think that when you go out, a lot of the reason why you stay out too long is to drink. And then when you're not drinking, you're very acutely aware of when the night needs to end.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? You're like, okay, I'm done. Like, it's very like, okay, this is good. But I think when you're drinking, you're just staying to drink. It's been interesting kind of being so acutely aware of the rhythms of the night and having other people just kind of not be. And so that is interesting in a way, but largely it's fine. I mean, I think as long as people, when you stop drinking, you become a projection for a lot of people's issues. That can be hard, is managing people's own feelings towards your drinking. That's the only thing that I...
And is this in the moment when they're drunk, you're sober at a thing? Or is this in more like just general...
Just generally, like people like being kind of triggered by the fact that you're not drinking or and asking a lot of questions and not really understanding it. And it's clear that this person that's asking you these things has their own kind of slippery relationship with alcohol and is probably just curious and mystified, just like I would have been, you know, 2 years ago. I would, if someone had come to me, I would have been like, honey, like, what? Like, I just would not have been able to conceive it. So I understand where they're coming from, but like, it can be a little like, you know, annoying to like have to deal with that a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think I really like that this book, not that I've read it, but like, appears obsessed to offer.
How many layers of clothing is your mind wearing, Chris?
How many layers of clothing? What do you mean? Well, I've got...
Is your mind wearing? It's called This Naked Mind. How many layers of clothing?
Oh, I see.
Honey.
I was like...
You're like, where is this going?
It's what do they say over here? Fur coat, no knickers. That's what it's wearing.
LOL. So your mind is wearing a fur coat.
And no knickers.
That makes sense. Yep.
But it's something that's offering a slightly like different path for, because people trying to work out their relationship with alcohol, perhaps AA can feel like the only route. And nice to see there's another path for other people who perhaps feel that isn't right for them. And congratulations, if that's not an annoying thing to say, but great that you found what works for you.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, it's been a game changer, and it's made just everything simpler and less complicated, I think.
I'm pausing you all there. Well, I'm pausing Ryan there for a little break. Go over to the feed, get part two. Lovely stuff. Hallelujah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Powered by Spirit Studios.